We're back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. The Milwaukee Rep opens an American premiere this week. Things I Know to Be True, a moving and often funny play about family, love, and loss, is the most recent work from award-winning Australian playwright and screenwriter Andrew Bovell. The play received its world premiere in Adelaide in 2016, and Bovell has adapted it for an American audience for this production.
We were able to speak with Bovell a few weeks ago when he was in Milwaukee to do some rewrites as needed during rehearsals, and he began by explaining how the American version of his script came to be.
Originally, it was set in Australia. It's had a production there. It's been produced in London. It's been produced in Spain. And then when Mark Clements invited me to consider bringing the play here, we talked about, well, should we do an Australian set version here, or should I think about trying to reset it in the Midwest? And I didn't want an American audience to have to see the play through the veil of an Australian setting or an Australian accent. You know, I think the play's very universal. It's about family. It's about that experience of loving within a family, loving too much, not loving enough, trying to get that right. And I just wanted the audience to feel as close to that experience as possible without the sort of exoticism of another setting.
Right, where it would set them back
or a little bit.
Put something...
I think so. Yeah, they'd kind of say, oh, okay, this is an Australian story, which might be fine and appropriate for some plays, but we just felt that this one spoke universally to families from all over. And we just wanted an audience to have as direct a relationship to that as possible. Plus, for me, you know, to be frank, it's smart for me to make a play more accessible to the American market, to the American audience, if it's set here. It's more likely to be looked at by other theatre companies if it's an American story. But we had to make sure we could get that right and that the play would be authentic to an American experience.
What kinds of things did you have to change?
Well, it's surprising. You know, we share a language. It's called English. But in fact, there's subtle differences right throughout. We just have different words to describe the same experience. You know, we are all humans. We all occupy the same, very similar emotional terrains. We have similar relationships to our children, to our parents, to our lives. But the way we describe that can be quite different and surprising. And as simple as, you know, the word garden in Australia means one thing. Here you would use the word yard. Or the word, lines like, it's past nine. In America, you would go, it's after nine. So I just had to be very rigorous about getting the language right, so that, you know, for an American audience, they weren't taken out of the experience by that sort of jarring use of a different way in, if you like.
I love the play. And again, I haven't seen it. I've only read it. But I like the way you've structured it with the monologues at the top of the various, I assume they're acts, you know,
yes.
Scenes, where almost everyone has a chance to describe it from their perspective before we actually get into the interaction, the family interaction, that even though I only have one sibling, I recognized so immediately that family dynamic.
Yeah. Look, it was important to me that everybody had a voice, every member of that family, particularly the four siblings. It's a family that is made up of two sisters and two brothers. And I wanted an opportunity for each of them to speak, to reveal their interior thoughts. In some ways, the play can be described as a portrait of their parents' marriage. And so you see the children's four points of view and their different experiences of what that marriage is. But also originally, the play was conceived to include elements of movement. And so the monologue form was more accessible to a physical kind of interpretation, which will also happen in the American production here in Milwaukee. There will be a very strong movement element built around those monologues, which I'm really curious to see how it unfolds here.
Well, when you talk about a movement element, what are you talking about?
Well, we're not talking about dance,
right.
But we're talking about a sort of heightened. You know, the play is not naturalistic. It's sort of heightened. It's quite poetic in its conception, in its language. And we're talking about a kind of theatre, a theatre dance, kind of, if you can imagine what that means. It's a sort of expression of the emotional world, or the emotional world expressed through the physicality of the actors and the image-making of the actors. So we're working with a really interesting choreographer from Chicago, Julia Rhodes, who has a company there called Lucky Plush, and she's collaborating with Mark in the development of the production.
It's almost Brechtian, the way you have it set up, that addressing the audience, that heightened movement. It's realistic, but it isn't.
Yes, yes. It's a very domestic play. You know, it's set within a family. It's largely set within a house. And yet, how can you elevate that, I guess? It was the interesting question for me as a playwright. How can we heighten that to give that a real sense of importance and beauty and poeticism? And I felt I could achieve that through the use of monologue and through the use of movement.
And you also have, you talk about poeticism, some of the ways the dialogue overlaps too, it's almost symphonic, the way people are talking around each other, at least on the page. You know, as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, oh, I'm hearing that as a chamber music, a piece of music kind of talking, and you hearing different things come in and out. They all connect, but we're hearing different pieces of it coming together as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's often, that observation's often been made about my work, that it draws on musical structures, that it, you can quite often imagine it as an orchestra, and sometimes the wood section is in focus and sometimes the brass section is in focus. And so the focus is shifting between different characters at different times. And there's also sort of quite often simultaneous things happening. So I do like to play with those kind of devices, again, to sort of elevate the ordinary depiction of people's lives, because this is a story of very familiar and recognizable people, but to elevate it to a theatrical plane, I guess. This is not television. It's not a feature film. And I think when we're trying to make theatre, we need to find a language that is somehow separate, that gives an audience a different kind of experience than those other mediums.
Well, and also to play maybe on the immediacy of it. You are in the room as this is happening, you as the audience member. And this is not something removed from you that was filmed 5 months ago.
No.
You're watching it unfold right now.
Yeah, which is the beauty of the theatre experience, I think, to... You know, it's so intimate. You're there in the room. The emotion that you're seeing is there playing out right before you. You can almost touch it. And with this play, which is deeply emotional, particularly, it really does take an audience on a deep emotional journey.
I expect tears at the end. Has that been in other productions?
That's been my experience, yes. You know, without giving away the plot, there is the play is an examination of grief and loss, and I've experienced many shows in which audience members are left profoundly weeping and unable to leave their chairs, but also reaching for comfort from the people that they're with. And you know, I've seen mothers and daughters embracing at the end of the show. I've seen fathers and son embracing. And that's been very moving to witness. You know, the play acts as a catalyst to feel things that perhaps we have shut away in our day-to-day lives, that we forget to sort of draw on, to reveal, and the play just allows us to sit within those emotions. And I think that's quite a cathartic experience for some of the audience.
I think so, too. There's also going to be, I think, again, without giving anything away, a recognition that you might find, you might connect with certain characters in certain ways and think, oh, yeah, I remember that or being that way, or that person's making me really furious, you know, or that one's making me sad. So I imagine that people bring their own stories.
I think so.
That.
And they identify with particular characters within the play, and their sympathies tend to shift from parents to back to the children, and or to another sibling. That the play keeps changing the landscape on you, changing the playing field. So you've got, you're constantly re-examining your own values and your own sort of your own morals, I guess. You know, essentially, it's a story about two blue-collar parents who have done everything in their lives to bring up their children so that they have more choices in life than they had. But ironically, the choices that the children then make alienate them from their parents. They are different generations. They are dealing with different concerns. They have broader choices in the world. They have more options than their parents ever had. And ironically, you know, that's what we want for our children. But actually, how does it impact upon us in the end if our children end up having different values to us or making choices that confront us? I think it's also a play about a long-term marriage. So at the end of it, you know, this couple have brought up four children. They're great kids. They're great people. They're brave. They're adventurous. But they each go through a particular crisis of identity in the play. And at the end of it all, the two parents, Bob and Fran, look at each other and go, well, what was that all about? And most importantly, what now? Now that the children have gone, what is our life? Given that the last 30 years, the last 25 years has been about bringing them up, now what do we do? And how do we re-find each other, I think, is so important in the play.
And even though it started out as an Australian play with an Australian family, it now has this American take on it. And I think it falls into the wonderful, similar kinds of mid-20th century American plays that were looking at the same thing. Arthur Miller.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Arthur Miller, even somewhat Tennessee Williams, maybe not quite as fraught as Eugene O'Neill, but where they were looking at that difficult, you know, you bring them up, you got to let them go, but then what happens?
Yeah.
And what if you don't like what they do?
Look, I think if you write in the English language, you can't write drama in the English language. You can't help but be influenced by Miller, by Williams, by those great American writers. They sort of set a benchmark and they created a genre that in many ways those of us that have come after are always referencing in one way or another. We're either trying to subvert it or depart from it or whatever. But the great family play, it's a form on its own. And you'll see it right through to more recent plays like August Osage County, the Tracy Letts play, which again is a very kind of a great kind of family drama, a gathering of a family in which secrets are revealed and everything that you believed in is turned upside down and somehow you have to rebuild in order to go on. And I think that's a great dramatic form as well.
And it describes all of us in some way.
Yeah.
It's so human.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's been a great challenge to set it in the Midwest to. And we debated whether, okay, should it be really specific? Should it be Milwaukee or should it just be a general sense of, you know, it could be Indiana, it could be Kansas, it could be Ohio. So we had to make that culturally accurate so that our audience goes, oh, yeah, this is authentic, I get this. But without being too specific, so because once you go, okay, it's Milwaukee, then there are particular kind of dialect issues, there are particular, you know, it becomes too specific, I think.
Right. I agree. I think it needs to be universal enough.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's set in a place, kind of.
Mm.
And it's one that I think it allows us as an audience to bring our sense of whatever that place is to the play, and we're not hung up on those particular details.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. And I hope that you know, as you said before, the audience will find different ways in through the various characters. There will be people there that identify very strongly with the mother. She's a strong matriarch. She's dominant in the family. She's quite controlling, but she's a truth teller. And if her children defy her, she challenges them. But then other people will identify with the children, the eldest daughter who, you know, is trying to, who's sort of in an unhappy marriage and trying to define a life beyond the confines of her parental expectations. I mean, I think each of the four children are trying to do that in one way or another.
There's a line that struck me. It's early on in the play, and I think it's Mark saying it to Mark, the oldest son, Rosie, the youngest daughter, and he said, "I thought you escaped."
Yeah. The play really opens on the story of Rosie, the youngest. She's 19 years old, and she goes to Europe on a big adventure. She's a lovely, curious, brave young woman, and she defies her parents' expectations. She doesn't go straight to college. She says, "Mum and Dad, no, I've got to do this." But she goes to Europe, and she's sort of overwhelmed by it and gets caught up in a relationship, and she has her heart broken. So she, in order to sort of ground herself, she writes a list of the things she knows to be true, which is where the title is from. But to her astonishment and her shock, it's a very short list, and she realizes, in fact, she doesn't know much at all. But the one thing that she does know is that things at home are the same as when she left, and she knows that she has to go home. And so she does go home, but ironically, nothing's going to stay the same. Everything is on the verge of change. In many ways, the play is a rite of passage of this young woman as she has to come to terms with the fact that things can't stay the same. And in fact, growing up is about accepting that those you love, particularly your family, aren't perfect. And that's really Rosie's journey.
The American premiere of Andrew Bovell's Things I Know to Be True is in previews this week at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. It runs through the end of March. There's more information at wuwm.com.